Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have become the subject of a great deal of attention and controversy. The source of this dispute lies in the institution's unique federal charters that allowed them to become exceptionally large, profitable, and politically powerful. Recently, however, Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac's exposure to risky mortgages compelled the federal government to intervene to stabilize both institutions and the mortgage markets more generally. Indeed, on September 7th, 2008, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were both placed into conservatorship by their federal regulator, the Federal Housing Finance Agency. And concurrent with this action, the U.S. Treasury entered into senior preferred stock agreements with each institution, that obligates the federal government to inject up to as much as $100 billion each into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Little did we know at the time, but this would be only the first of many public sector capital infusions for financial institutions. And in my remarks this afternoon, I'd like to provide you with a little bit of background about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then I'm going to describe the sources of financial distress facing these two systemically important institutions, outline the federal government's steps to stabilize them, and present some evidence concerning the effectiveness of this and other recent federal interventions in the secondary mortgage markets. At the end of my talk, I'll offer some principles for federal involvement in these markets over the longer term. Fannie Mae's roots are in the Great Depression. The National Mortgage Association of Washington, as it was first known, was created within the federal government in 1938. Its business was to purchase FHA-insured mortgages from financial institutions across the United States. Now, Fannie Mae was subsequently spun off out of the federal government in 1968 and became a publicly traded company. And the reason for this was it was a way for the federal government to reduce the debt during the Vietnam War. By contrast, Congress in 1970 created Freddie Mac, which was owned at the time by the 12 federal home loan banks and the savings and loan institutions that were members of those banks. Freddie Mac likewise became a publicly traded company in 1989 as part of the resolution of the thrift crisis. Hence today, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are quasi-public, quasi-private financial institutions which are often referred to as government-sponsored enterprises, or GSEs. On the other hand, each was created by Congress and maintains an exclusive federal charter. I should say on one hand. On the other hand, shares of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are both traded on the New York Stock Exchange. This unusual governance arrangement resulted in two often opposing corporate objectives. One, fulfilling certain social policy goals and assisting related political constituencies, and two, maximizing shareholder value. By law, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are limited to operating in the secondary mortgage market, and their participation in this market takes two forms. The first is the issuance of credit guarantees against mortgage pools, and this is often referred to as securitization. The second business segment at Fannie and Freddie is leveraged investment in mortgages and mortgage-backed securities. And as of June 30th of this year, the two companies together held almost $1.8 trillion in assets and another $3.7 trillion in net credit guarantees. This $5.5 trillion in obligation slightly exceeded the $5.3 trillion in publicly held Treasury debt at that time. It also reflects about one half of all residential mortgage debt outstanding. Hence, while Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac's federal charters limit the scope of their activities, the scale is tremendous. One important reason for this is that their charters also confer several statutory and regulatory benefits that result in capital markets viewing Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac's obligations as being implicitly guaranteed by the federal government. Examples of such benefits include lines of credit with the Treasury, the ability to issue government securities under the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934, and the ability of both companies to use the Federal Reserve as their fiscal agent. The perception of an implied federal guarantee conveys a subsidy on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, part of which is translated into lower mortgage rates for consumers. These perceptions have also insulated Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from market-imposed limits on the institution's size and risk-taking. Now, these features were well understood by the federal government, which created a regulatory structure for the two institutions in 1992. Unfortunately, this structure proved deficient in many respects. Now, as we're all aware, housing and mortgage markets have become increasingly stressed over the past 2 years. This stress has led to significant dollar losses at a variety of financial institutions, including Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And the losses borne by these GSEs emanate from four places. The first source of losses is the write-down in the value of private label mortgage securities backed by subprime and so-called Alt-A mortgages. Now, private label mortgage securities, as many of you may know, are those that are not guaranteed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginny Mae. Holdings of such securities likely reflected a couple factors. One is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac faced distorted risk-taking incentives because of the perceived implied federal guarantee. Another factor was the federal requirements that mandate a certain percentage of each institution's business be devoted to affordable housing. Now, the second source of financial distress at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has been the substantial increase in provisioning for expected mortgage-related credit losses. These expected credit losses are not only associated with subprime and Alt-A mortgages, but also with prime loans. A third problem has been the loss in market value of each institution's holdings of their own mortgage-backed securities. An unusual and unforeseen widening of the yield spread between Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guaranteed mortgage securities and 10-year treasuries has led to mark-to-market losses. Now, this widening is believed to be primarily caused by the financial market turbulence, although the credit problems at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have also likely played a role. Finally, following the imposition of the conservatorship regime, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac wrote off so-called tax-deferred assets in line with accounting conventions required of other regulated financial institutions. This write-off was also caused by dim prospects for positive profitability anytime soon at either of the enterprises. Now, total losses for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac over the past four quarters have been about $67 billion. Now, while significant, these losses are modest in relation to the institution's overall book of business, the $5.5 trillion that I alluded to earlier. The problem was that both institutions were extremely leveraged, leaving little room for error. And this is a point that's been made by a number of policymakers, perhaps most notably by former Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President Bill Poole. Now, earlier this year, debt investors became increasingly concerned about the financial condition of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And these investors then sought clarity from the federal government about whether bondholders would be shielded from losses. The attendant uncertainty caused a dramatic fall in Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac's share prices during June and early July of this year. In response to concerns that the two institutions would be unable to roll over their short-term debt, Treasury Secretary Paulson requested that the federal government be given broad authority to invest in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities. That provision was included in the Housing and Economic Recovery Act that passed in July. During August of this year, the Treasury studied investment options and sought third-party opinions about the financial conditions at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Treasury also engaged the regulator, the FHFA, in discussions about the legal and operational hurdles to government involvement in one or both institutions. And on September 7th, FHFA Director James Lockhart, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke spoke at a press conference. At that press conference, these officials outlined a plan to stabilize the residential mortgage finance market that included placing both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into conservatorship and establishing new Treasury-operated liquidity facilities aimed at supporting the two institutions, a mortgage-backed securities purchase facility and a standing credit facility. Now, by becoming conservator, the FHFA assumed the responsibilities of the directors, officers, and shareholders of both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. New CEOs were also named to act as agents of the conservator. Concurrent with the conservatorships, the Treasury entered into senior preferred stock agreements with each GSE. And the purpose of these agreements was to ensure that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac maintain positive net worth going forward. If the regulator determines that either institution's liabilities exceed assets under generally accepted accounting principles, the Treasury will contribute cash capital equal to the difference in exchange for senior preferred stock. Each of these agreements is for an indefinite term and for up to $100 billion. In exchange for these senior preferred stock agreements, the Treasury received from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac $1 billion in senior preferred shares up front and warrants for the purchase of common stock representing 79.9% of each institution on a fully diluted basis. These agreements also included various covenants that give the Treasury Department a great deal of control over both enterprises. Now, the intent of the senior preferred stock agreements was to provide comfort to Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac's senior and subordinated creditors and holders of mortgage-backed securities. This action, in turn, was expected to lower and stabilize the cost of mortgage finance. Of course, the senior preferred stock agreements had significant negative consequences for both GSE shareholders. The initial market reaction to the federal intervention at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was tighter spreads on each institution's debt and mortgage-backed securities. Related to this, conforming mortgage rates fell immediately by about 50 basis points. These market reactions, coupled with a relatively smooth operational transition, suggested that the imposition of conservatorships at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was, so far, a success. However, by the 1st of November, mortgage rates and yields on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac obligations had climbed back to pre-conservatorship levels. Policymakers searched for additional tools to lower and stabilize the cost of mortgage finance. And in response, the Federal Reserve announced on November 25th that it was establishing new facilities to purchase up to $500 billion in mortgage-backed securities guaranteed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae, and that we would also purchase up to $1 billion in debt obligations of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Home Loan Bank System. The federal intervention into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac consisted of both the imposition of conservatorship regimes and the senior stock purchase agreements. Congress will likely need to pass new legislation to move these institutions out of the current arrangements. Today's consensus in Washington is that the previous public-private business model is inherently flawed and unstable. Indeed, it is unclear what role Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will ultimately play in the U.S. housing finance system. And the reasons for this uncertainty do not solely rest with the two enterprises. The financial distress at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has occurred along with significant and well-publicized problems at private mortgage insurance companies, monoline bond insurers, and a wide number of mortgage originators. The federal government has stepped in to fill some of this void. FHA-insured mortgages have increased as a share of mortgage originations, and Ginnie Mae securitization activity has similarly expanded. Hence, the federal government may need to redefine its role in supporting secondary mortgage markets. Now, secondary mortgage markets can help reduce mortgage rates by increasing liquidity, allowing geographic diversification, and encouraging competition. The federal government played a historically important role in developing these markets, both directly through Ginnie Mae and indirectly through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. However, based on my research, I have concluded that a reliance on secondary mortgage markets has probably been excessive, owing to a couple factors. One factor was regulatory capital requirements for GSEs and depository institutions that encouraged securitization. Another factor was the weak mitigation of the numerous conflicts of interest inherent in the so-called originate-to-distribute model of financial intermediation. Looking ahead, I think it would be very helpful for the federal government to develop a set of principles to guide its involvement in secondary mortgage markets. Among other things, I believe that policymakers should, one, reassess various public policies aimed at encouraging home ownership; two, reconsider the mechanisms relied upon for ensuring the flow of funds to mortgage markets during stressful times; three, revisit regulatory policies that act to distort financial risk management decisions; and four, require that any interventions are made transparent by accounting for them in the federal budget process. The past 2 years have been a time of extraordinary upheaval for U.S. mortgage markets, and in my opinion, the associated adjustments are likely to continue into 2009 as the new administration and Congress take the lead in further action to stabilize our nation's mortgage finance system. Thank you.